We're holding on page Yud in Megillah, about four lines from the bottom, towards the end of Os Tes. We're still in the middle of the Psichtas, the various introductions to their drushes on Megillas Esther that the Chachamim would do. Each one took a different pasuk from someplace in Tanakh and used it as an introduction to give us a new insight and a new dimension of understanding of the events of the Megillah. So now comes the next one. Rovel a pasuk l'pischa l'hai parshasa mehocha. You have it? Rava used the following pasuk as the introduction to his drasha and Megillas Esther. Pasuk says in Mishle, "Birvois tzaddikim, when there's many tzaddikim, yismach, or when the tzaddikim become great, yismach ha'am, the people are happy. Over Mishel Rosha, and when the Rosha is ruling, ye'onach am, then the people sigh, whether they krecht because of their troubles." So, Birvois Tzadikim Zamorchev Esther, the first half of the pasuk, when the Tzadikim multiply and when they increase in greatness, that refers to Mordechai and Esther. And then Yismach Ha'om, the people are happy. Kedichtiv, as you have the pasuk, Mordechai Yotzim Lefnei HaMelech, that Mordechai goes out wearing a whole royal wardrobe. So that was the Birvois Tzadikim Yismach Ha'om. Marsha points out, first of all, we know that we have the famous Gemara in Kiddushin, which the Rambam brings, and that ever brought any number of times in Sichas, that a person should always look at the world as half balanced, and he does one mitzvah, he inclines the whole scale to good, and ha'olam nidanach haruba, the world is judged according to the majority, so therefore, when you have more tzaddikim, then therefore, so the whole world is happy, because now Hashem brings brachas. The word birvois can also mean when they become important, and then also when Mordechai became important over there, and when went out bilvush malchus, then yismach ha'am. And then when it says when the Rosha rules, then the people are sighing, that refers to Haman, as the pasuk says, the king Achashverosh and Haman are sitting down to drink after the gzeira was sealed, and the city of Shushan was perplexed and confused and basically in a bad way. Now Marsha points out you have an interesting nuance in the pasuk over here. Birvois tzadikim yismach ha'om with a hey, or v'mshel rosha ya'onach om without the hey. What's the difference? Because when you think about it, when you look at Haman's original gzera, he never actually specified in so many words that it applies to the Jews. Now the Jews knew good and well, and therefore that's why Evo Gadol Yehudim, as it says over there in Perek Dalet, but he didn't actually write out in so many words that it's going to be to wipe out the Jews. He just said even to begin with, he told Ahasuerus, Yeshnaam Echad, there's one nation that I have it against, and I want you to give me permission to destroy them. So therefore, so like everybody in Shushan, that's Va'u Shushan Navoicha, not just the Jews in Shushan. Everybody in Shushan was very perplexed and confused, and what's going to happen? Are we the ones who are marked? Therefore, Ya'onach Om, the people in general are sad and are sighing when Haman is in power. But when Mordechai came to power and he wrote out the letters clearly saying that we're talking about the Asher Nasan Amalach LaYehudim Asher B'chal Ir Va'ir, then it's Ha'om, the specific nation of the Jewish people that is Yismach, that's happy about how things turned out. So that's why that nuance in the pasuk. Ben Yehoyada explains in keeping with what he was saying, but what we've learned before, that he said that many of these psichtas are meant to explain why Taka did things turn out as they were, given that the Jewish people were guilty of certain serious averus. Why in the end did Hashem save them? So the Birvois Tzadikim helps clarify that. It means that the ruchnius of Mordechai and Esther grew greater, and in particular Mordechai infuses some of his ruchnius into Esther, and therefore that makes that now the power, that greater power of the two combined Tzadikim together, is enough to save the Jewish people. Next, Rav Masna Oma Mehocha. Rav Masna said from here, meaning he used the following pasuk as his psichta from Megillas Esther. Pasuk says, "Ki mi goy gadol." What other great nation is there? Ashaloya lekim krovim elav, that has a God who is so near to him. Kashem alekenu b'chol kareinu, like Hashem our God b'chol kareinu elav, whenever we call out to him. Meaning, and because Maloy Chalaritz Kavodai, and Marsha says, so first of all, on one level, what it means is, now the Rambam mentions at the end of his Akdama to Yad HaChazaka, when we talk about, so we have the seven mitzvahs to Rabbanon, one of them is Mikra Megillah, It's based on this pasuk that the Kriyas Megillah is meant to highlight this point that Hashem is always close to us and Hashem always listens to our tefillas. And therefore, at that time when they were threatened with being destroyed by Haman, then they davened to the Eibishter and he showed how that he is Kroiv, that Elokim Kroiv Me'elav. And therefore, so that pasuk really is a very suitable introduction to the whole concept of the Megillah. Marshall points out another angle on it also. Haman is claiming Yeshnei Amechad Mefuzo Mefodad Bein Amim, the whole nation of the Jewish people are scattered and dispersed among all the other nations, and Hashem has sent them away and he's not interested in them anymore. Abba, we say on the contrary, Hashem is Elokim Kroivim Elav. Hashem is constantly close to us because wherever a Yid is, the Eibishter is there with him. Rav Ashi, Amar Mehacha, Rav Ashi says there's a different pasuk that he used for his psichta. Pasuk says, "Oy hanisa elikim lavoy v'gemer." Has there ever been any other god who took out a nation from among another nation like you have by Yitzias Mitzrayim? So here, what you have is Marshal explains. The point is, Rav Ashi is comparing Yitzias Mitzrayim to the Geula of the Nes Purim. The point being, in other words, what happened by Yitzias Mitzrayim? Not only were the Jewish people saved from a terrible fate, but also we know b'kedera shabishlu b'hem nisbashlu, the same way that the Mitzrayim plotted to destroy the Jewish people, that backfired on them, and they ended up getting drowned in the Yam Suf like they wanted to drown the babies. And here, with the story of Purim, we have exactly the same kind of thing, where Haman intended to hang Mordechai, and he intended to wipe out the Jews, and instead you have exactly the opposite. So therefore, so this pasuk really highlights that point, that is Hashem's way of doing things, kibad dovar shezodu aleihem, the exact way that they plotted to destroy is how they themselves end up getting destroyed. So yeah, it shows, in other words, this way we realize that Hashem is running things. Yeah, very much so. Okay. Pasuk says, Vayihi b'mei Achashverosh, Omer Rav, Vayihi. So Rav says, that, as we said before, Vayihi is a Loshon Tsar. The word Vayihi is short for Vay and He. Niskayim, Masha Kosi b'Torah. At this point, there was fulfilled what it says in the Torah at the end of the Teichacha, V'ismakautem Shom lo'ivecho la'avodim l'shvachos. You're going to try to sell yourself to your enemies as slaves and maidservants of Ein Koine, and nobody's going to want to buy you because you're going to be marked for destruction. Rachman Otzlan, Rashi says over there, Ki yigzu aleichem hered v'kiloyen. So therefore, so Rav is saying that actually came true. At this point, we see Esther says to Achashverosh, if we had been sold by Avodim v'Lashvachos, then I wouldn't be saying anything, but like this, it's not even that. Now, what is this doing over here? We're still dealing with psichtis of the Megillah. We still haven't finished with those yet. So, in fact, Agoris Agra takes out the Vayihi b'mei Achashverosh Omer Rav Vayihi. According to him, that belongs later in the Gemara when the Gemara is going to actually start doushening the words of Megillah's Esther per se. However, Marashah says it does belong over here in the sense that we're saying that there was a double tzara over there. Not only they're being threatened with being that they're slaves, which already they're slaves and subjects of Achashverosh, but now on top of that, the Ein Koine, because now they're threatened with being wiped out altogether. Rahman al-Islam. Ben Yehoyada says another point of it. He says that like this, we just talked about that the Eibishter took out Goy Mikerev Goy, that by Matan Torah Hashem took out one nation from among another nation, the Jewish people from among the Mitzrayim. The Medrash, by the way, compares it to, it was literally like a birth. Before a baby is born, it's attached to the mother, and then it's not an easy process to separate one from the other and get the baby out. This is how it was with the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. Anyway, Ben Yehoyada says the word Goy breaks down into Gimel Vai. Vai, as in Rav is saying over here, Vai Vidi, and Gimel, as in, because we know the Jewish people have three parts, however you look at it, Koinim, Levim, Yisraelim, Anoshim, Anoshim, Bataf, etc. So therefore, so that's what Rav is doing over here with his Vai Vidi, hinting that this posit, Oyan Nisya Lekim, Lavo Lakachas, like Goy Miked of Goy, is very appropriate also as an introduction to the Vai, to the triple Vai that they had at the beginning of the story of the Megillah. Anyway, Shmuel Amar. Shmuel says a different pasuk that he used for psichta, another pasuk from the Teichacha, this one from the Teichacha in Bechokorisai, Loi ma'astim v'loi ga'altim l'chaloisa. Hashem says, I've not rejected them, and I've not thrown them away or been disgusted by them, l'chaloisam, to wipe them out. So the triple expression, loy ma'astim, loy ga'altim, and l'chaloisam, means loy ma'astim mimei yivonim. Hashem is saying, I did not reject the Jewish people in the time of the Yevonim, and I brought about the Nes Chanukah, v'loy ga'altim mimei asfasyonus keso or Nebuchadnezzar, the loy ga'altim refers to that at the time of Aspasianus Caesar, which is he's the one who began the siege of Yerushalayim at the end of the second Mishmikdash, and then we know the whole story in Gittin where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai went to meet him and told him you're the new emperor, etc. And then he left, and his son Titus took over. So in his times, though, is when he was king, when he was emperor, is when the Churban Bayis Sheni actually took place. In the printed Gemaras, it says Nebuchadnezzar, but it seems that was changed by the censors. And then Chaloisim, Mimei Haman, Hashem says, I didn't wipe them out, means in the time of Haman. And the Pasuk continues, Lahofer Brisi Itam. Hashem says, I did not cancel my covenant with them. That means Bimei Roimiyim or Parusiyim. Again, this seems to be something changed by the censors. The original word was Roimiyim, and the censors changed it to Parusiyim. Marsha points out the Aspasianus is at the beginning of the Roman Empire. In his times, the second Mishmikdash was destroyed while he was emperor. Later on, the Roimiyim means the entire long Golus that's been ever since then, which is Golus Roimi. So in both those times, Hashem never rejected and never gave up on the Jewish people. Ki ani Hashem alekehem, as Hashem finishes off the pasuk, because I am Hashem their God. That means the most Gog and Magog, even in the times of Gog and Magog, Hashem is saying, I will be their God and I will take them out of that sorrow. So Shmuel used this as an introduction to his drasha on Megillas Esther to explain that Hashem is saying, in that Hashem is hinting at in that pasuk, to all the different troubles that the Jewish people went through in different times, including the threat of being wiped out by Haman, and every time Hashem is saying, I'm not giving up on the Jewish people and I'm not rejecting. Why are they out of order? So Marsha says, listen, I mean, you know, L'chaloisam necessarily has to be Haman, because that's the first time that you have a threat of L'chaloisam. The other time is Aspasianus Caesar or Roimiyim or whatever is it, you don't have, or Yevonim, you don't have that kind of threat. So therefore, of necessity, it has to be out of order. Then he brings from Yalkut Shimoni that actually lists them, and that actually says differently and actually relates each one of them to the Dalad Malchus in order. So Loi Ma'astim refers to the time of the Kastim, Nebuchadnezzar and his people. Loga Altim would be in the days of Paras and Madai, including Haman. Lachaloisim would be in the times of the Yevonim. And Lahofa Brisi Itam, Hashem is saying that I never give up on my bris with them in the time of the Rome. So according to that, it goes in the proper order of the various goals. So all these times, Hashem is saying, I never gave up on the Jewish people. I never reject them. I never abhor them. I never whatever. Yeah. So Shmuel would use this as his introduction to his drasha on Megillas Esther. B'masnisa tana, in a brisa we learn also darshining that pasuk, but darshining it somewhat different. Loi ma'astim means we may cast him. So this fits better with what Marsha is saying with what's brought in Yalkut Shimoni. That the first expression, Loi Ma'astim, I've not rejected them, means in the times of casting. And we see that Hashem did not reject us. During that time, Hashem arranged that Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Ba'azaria would be prominent at Nebuchadnezzar's court, and they would be able to shield the Jewish people from Nebuchadnezzar's Xeris and help moderate them and then teach and lead the Jewish people. Next, v'loi ga'altim, when it continues that I didn't reject them, that means b'mei homon, she'amati lehem Mordechai v'Esther, I put up Mordechai and Esther to save the Jewish people. L'chaloisa means b'mei yevonim, she'amati lehem Shimon HaTzadik, u'matisya ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, v'chashmeno yevonim, in the times of the Greeks. At the beginning, when the Greeks first conquered Eretz Yisrael, when Alexander the Great conquered Eretz Yisrael, there was Shimon HaTzadik. And as we know, he prevented where the Kosim, you have the story that where the Kosim, we learned in Yoma, where the Kosim mastered on the Jews and then convinced Alexander the Great to destroy the Mishmikdash, and Shimon HaTzadik intervened and prevented it from happening. And then later on, at the end of Golos Yavon, Yam Matisyahu Kohen Gadol and Chashmino Yavona, who fought against the Yavonim and ejected them from Eretz Yisrael. Next, Lahofa Brisi Itam, that Hashem says I didn't break my covenant with them. And Marsha, by the way, points out that the context of this pasuk is be'eretz oyveihem. Hashem says ba'afkam zois b'yosam be'eretz oyveihem. Now some of these golusim, it's easy enough to see how they're described as be'eretz oyveihem. When it was golus kastim and golus paras and modeh, then the Jewish people were taken in golus, scattered all over the kingdoms. What about in times of Yavon? They were mostly living in Eretz Yisrael. Nevertheless, since the Yavonim were ruling over Eretz Yisrael, it can still be called be'eretz oyveihem. Anyway, The Hofer Brisi Itam, we may Roimiyim or Pausiyim. Again, Pausiyim was something changed by the censor. The original word is Roimiyim. Shemati lehem shal beis Rebbe v'chach meidurus, that I arranged for them that they have the family of Rebbe, which means not only Rebbe, the composer of the Mishnah, but all the Nesiim before him as well, who all had contacts with the government, and they all were able at various times to moderate and cancel Xeris against the Jewish people. But Chachmei Doris and the Chachamim of the generations after that, throughout Golus Roimi, who keep on leading us at all times. And when the Pasuk finishes off, Ki Ani Hashem Alekeim, means the Osid Lavoi, that's talking about in the future. After the four Golus are over, the Ein Kol Um of Loshen shall let this behem, no nation and no speakers of any language are going to have any domination over the Jewish people. Which means, Maharshal says, listen, each of the previous Golas, there was a certain rulership of the nations over them afterwards. In the end, it'll be the Gola Amitis Vashlema, Anivale Malach, like Leitzias Mitzrayim, and therefore, at that point, Ki Ani Hashem Alekeim, Hashem exclusively will be the one ruling over us. There's actually a medrash. Now, we're going to have later on in the Gemara, we're going to have where it mentions four kings who ruled over the entire known world. The medrash actually mentions 10, and it says Hashem is the first, and Hashem is also the last. Eventually, you have the eighth one is Mashiach, the ninth one is Mashiach, and then the tenth is Hashem himself. There's going to come a point when we have Hashem himself ruling over us without any memutza. That's what we say in davening. So that also fits with what we're saying over here. Ki ani Hashem alekeim, that Hashem will be our exclusive ruler. Reb Levi continues the Gemara. Reb Levi posach lapid. By the way, you have in connection with this, we see the Gemara is saying that in every generation, Hashem always made sure there are leaders of the Jewish people. I think I may have mentioned this shiur before about a well-known story involving there was the Hasofers from Australia, originally from Tasmania, where you have the story in Shmos V'Siporim, where they're living over there knowing next to nothing of Yiddishkeit. He's reading from an English Tanakh. He discovers this kind of thing, that in every generation, Hashem made sure there's always a leader of the Jewish people. So he realizes there must be someone now, some such leader now, but I have no idea who he is. He and his wife are davening, and then however they know how to, please show us who that leader is. And one day out of the blue, Itchemeyer Groner, Oliver Shalom, shows up in Tasmania that Rebbe had called him up and told him, go to Tasmania and you'll find over there a couple who needs you. So yeah.
He didn't know.
He was an Israeli. She was, I forget where she was from. Yeah. Right. Yeah. 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 The whole story of the Shmuel's supporting me, all the details. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Reb Levi posach lapischa lahai parshasa mehacha. Reb Levi used the following posach as his introduction to his drasha on Megillas Esther. The Pasuk warned, you have to get rid of the seven nations of Canaan, the Imloisarishuas Yoshvei Haaretz. If you don't dispossess though the Goyim who live in Eretz Yisrael, then you're going to be in trouble. So we see the same way, what drove all the events of Purim and the fact that the Jewish people were in such danger is because hundreds of years earlier, Shaul hadn't done the job of wiping out Amalek. So we use that as his introduction to the drasha. In fact, Maharshal says the main point, why is he using that pasuk? Because the pasuk continues that if you don't kick them out, then the pasuk says they're going to cause you trouble. Al ha'oretz asher atem yoshvim bo. Now, if it just means Eretz Yisrael, there's no reason to mention that. Where else are Jews living if not in Eretz Yisrael? So it means even in other lands, when you're eventually living in other lands, nevertheless, with Tzoreru Eschem, they're going to be harassing you and causing you trouble. And that describes exactly the situation in the times of Ahasuerus, where they're living in 127 different countries and they're still all menaced by Haman as a result, again, of Shaul not doing the job of killing Amalek, of killing Agag and wiping out Amalek hundreds of years ago. Not so much one door suffering for the other door, but the point is that there's still an ongoing result of it because Shaul didn't do the job. Therefore, Agag was still able to father a child, and therefore generations later, he says a different pasuk. The next couple of psukim later, it continues. Hashem says, the same kind of thing that I plan to do to them, to the seven nations, es elochem. Instead, I will do that to you. So the same way, in other words, this is Hashem had intended that Amalek should be wiped out. Instead, they didn't do the job properly. And it wasn't just Shaul personally. He mentions over there that he listened to the people. So they also have a certain guilt in it. And the result is that generations later, they were on the verge of being wiped out themselves, Rahman al-Islam. Simcha, fine. Okay, I don't know what that means over here, but yeah. Actually, though, Marsha points out, in a way, though, you can say the pasuk is sort of hinting at that there's two possibilities. Is it that I wanted that those goyim should be destroyed, and if you don't do that, then instead I will do to you what I thought to do to them? Or it could be the other way around. I planned that they will dominate over you, and instead now I'm going to make it v'napechu, that you will dominate over them, which is also what happened at the end of the story of Purim. So therefore, the pasuk is a very suitable introduction to the story of Purim, because it gives it's both. And maybe that's why the v'hoyah is loshen simcha, because it means there can be that simcha dika possibility as well. Okay, now we get into darshining the actual psukim of the Megillah. It starts out by Hibi Me'achashverosh, and here is, by the way, where Hagoris Hagros sticks in the piece over there, Omer Rav Vayvihi, darshining the word Vayhi. But anyway, why is he named Achashverosh? Now, you don't know what I mean, why is he named Achashverosh? Because that was his name. The point is, though, first of all, Marsha says very often the Chachamim darshin the names of even the names of people mentioned in Tanakh, even Goyim. The Gemara will often darshin them in terms of Lashon Kodesh. So the same thing here, the Gemara wants to find different drashas on the name Achashverosh. We could say also, I mean, you know, we learned in Rosh Hashanah that all the kings of Persia had a title Artaxerxes. So over here, why does the Megillah have to call him Achashverosh by his personal name? Instead, it could have called him Achashasta. It could have just called him Amelech, for that matter. So a lot of possibilities. So why does it name him with the name Achashverosh? Amar Rav Levi, Achiv Shel Rosh or Ben Gilo Shel Rosh. It means he's the brother of the head, which we're going to say in a second. The head refers to Nebuchadnezzar. And he's the Ben Gil. He's the same kind of person. He's under the same kind of mazel as Nebuchadnezzar. So when we say a brother, we don't mean literally a brother. In English, sometimes you have the expression that you say two people are brothers from another mother or something, meaning they're not literally brothers, but they're so similar in their habits and in their personality or whatever, that they might as well be brothers. That's what we mean over here. Achashverosh is really another person like Nebuchadnezzar. And we have to realize, you know, when you think about it, the Megillah was written when Achashverosh was still ruling. The last events in the Megillah that they made, Yigeres HaPurim, Azoris HaShenis, and all that, Achashverosh is still alive. Which is one reason, by the way, why the Megillah ends over there. You have the short Perek Yud over there that begins by Yosem HaMelech HaChashverosh Mas Al Aretz V'Yayom Chumasi Sokbo Gurosei, because they had to compliment him. I mean, it's written under his reign, so they had to put in a compliment to him. But for that reason also, they couldn't outright say what a Rosha he was, because they'd get in trouble. But they put in enough hints in the Megillah, as we're going to go through, as in the sugi over here, to see that we can understand what he really was. So the first hint is the actual name, that Achashverosh means that he's similar to the Roish, which the Gemara is going to explain refers to Nebuchadnezzar. So we should realize that, after all, he was an out-and-out Rosha. Later on, the Gemara explains he was an even bigger anti-Semite than Haman. But again, you know, they couldn't write that openly in the Megillah. They had to make it seem as though he was a decent fellow who just got tricked by Haman. So then that, yeah, well, that's actually earlier in this Masechta. We'll get to it sometime eventually. But yeah, you have the whole story of Talmai HaMelech with the translation of the Torah, where they have to change certain things so he doesn't misunderstand the Torah. Yeah, so this is somewhat similar. So who's Rosh? So we're going to explain. That means Nebuchadnezzar. Ochiv Shol Rosh means Ochiv Shol Nebuchadnezzar HaRosh HaNishnikar Rosh. Nebuchadnezzar is called in the Pasuk metaphorically the head. You have the story in Sefer Daniel where Nebuchadnezzar has this dream where he sees a giant statue made out of different metals, and then a rock comes and knocks over the whole statue, etc. And Daniel explains to him that this is hinting at the four Malchus, the four empires that are going to rule over the Jewish people till Mashiach comes, and the stone represents Mashiach, who's going to knock them all down. Anyway, so Daniel tells him, you saw the statue had a golden head, Antu Reisha Didava, you Nebuchadnezzar, being the greatest of all of those empires, are like the golden head. So therefore, Nebuchadnezzar is called the head. And so now we're saying Achashverosh means Ochiv Shel Rosh, means that Achashverosh is the same kind of guy, the same kind of Rosha and lowlife as Nebuchadnezzar. Or Ben Gilo Shel Rosh, in what sense is it the same Ben Gil, like a person of the same of the same mazel? For example, Nebuchadnezzar Horag, Ruhu Bikash Larag. Nebuchadnezzar killed many Jews at the time of the Churban. Achashverosh intended to have all the Jews killed when he with Haman's plot. Nebuchadnezzar hechriv. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the first base of Mekdash. Vehu bikesh lahachriv. Achashverosh wanted it to remain destroyed, as we learned in Rosh Hashanah. He was in his times the permission to rebuild the second base of Mekdash was rescinded, and he didn't. And he continued to not allow it throughout the whole time that he was ruling. Only after he died and Daryavish II took over, only then were they able to restore the rebuild. So therefore, he's Ben Gilo. He's the same kind of mazel as Nebuchadnezzar. In fact, Marashah says, literally, they're under the same mazel in the sense. We know mazel madim, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, a person born under mazel madim tends to be, has a tendency to be a very violent, blood-shedding kind of person. And both Nebuchadnezzar and Achashverosh are that kind of person. Next, the Chenu Omer, as we find the pasuk of Malchus Achashverosh Pschilas Malchus, during the reign of Achashverosh at the beginning of his kingship, Kosvus Sitna, the Goyim and the Kusim and whatever were living in Eretz Yisrael, they wrote an accusation Al Yoshev Yehuda Yerushalayim against the Jews who are living in Yehuda and Yerushalayim, telling Achashverosh that it's dangerous to allow the rebuilding of the Mikdash and you have to put a stop to it, and he did. So we see that he's Ben Gilo, he's the same kind of person as the Nebuchadnezzar, wanting the Mikdash to remain destroyed. So that's one meaning of the name Achashverosh. Or Shmuel, Amar Shmuel says a different reason why he's called Achashverosh. Shohushcharup name Shoyisrael b'yamav k'shulek deira. In his times, the faces of the Jewish people throughout his empire turned black like the bottom of a pot. So the word Achashverosh is related to the word Marashah says. You can rearrange the letters to make shochar h, something that becomes black from the fire. So they were so humiliated, and they were so panicked and everything that their faces turned black from worry and from whatever. Rab Chanina or Rab Yochanan Omar, Shakola Zoichre Omar Och L'Roisha. Another meaning of the name Achashverosh. Anybody who would remember Achashverosh would say, "Oi to my head." Either I have such a headache from thinking about him, or he should have a headache. Whatever. The point is that the name Achashverosh is related to a word for headache. Marshall says it can mean both. It can mean the oive to my head, and it can be halavai, he should suffer from lots of headaches. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina, Amashah, called not Nasu B'yom of Roshim. Another meaning, Achashverosh, is that everybody became poor in his time. So, och, the word och, besides meaning a brother, also can mean, is also a word for oive. You find it in some places in Tanakh where the word och means woe or vey or something like that. So here with och l'roshe, it means that woe to my head. And the same way, och that were poor, that were rosh. Shenema, as we have Vayosim Achamelach Achashverosh Masal Aretz, that Achashverosh imposed taxes on his whole kingdom, so everybody became poor. So therefore, och, rosh, woe were all poor because of the high taxes. So that's another meaning of Achashverosh. Next, the pasuk says hu Achashverosh. So what does the hu mean? It means hu berisha mitchilosim ad soifot. He remained the same Rasha from beginning to end. Again, you shouldn't think, you look at the end of the Megillah, it seems like Achashverosh has become a nice guy. He's doing whatever Esther is asking him for, and he's giving Mordechai base Haman and so on and so forth. So you would think maybe he turned into a nice guy. No, you have to realize he's still actually the same Rasha. As we said, that he never, after all, gave permission to rebuild the Bais HaMikdash, even after all of this. So therefore, you still remain the same Rasha. There is, by the way, an interesting idea that one of the Mephoshim brings. I don't remember which one, that says the reason why to begin with Achashverosh hated the Jews is because his astrologers have told him that a Jew is going to take over his kingdom, and he figured it means the Jews are going to revolt and they're going to overthrow him. He didn't realize that it means Daryavish, who was Esther's son. So once he realized that Esther herself is a Jewish woman, then he has no reason to worry about that anymore. But still, the Gemara is saying over here, nevertheless, he may have been better disposed towards the Jews after that, but he still remained a Rosh. Similarly, we have other examples where it says who by a person, and it means he's still the same person throughout. When it says who Esav avi Adam, same thing. Who berishim et chilosav ad zoyfai. Esav, from beginning to end, was a Rosha. The first time we find Esav doing anything, he's 15 years old and he's doing five Averis on the day when Avram Avinu passed away and then he sold the Bechorah to Yaakov. So from the beginning until the end, however long he lived, then he was still the same Rosha. Same way, Hu HaMelech Ochaz, the pasuk says about King Ochaz, we talked about the other day that he closed all the Batei Medrash and outlawed children learning Torah, and he brought up a Dezorah into Eretz Yisrael and did all kinds of other Averis as well. And it says on him, Hu HaMelech Ochaz, same thing, Hu Berishim, Mitchilos Avad Sofer. From beginning to end, he was the same Rosha. Maushaw explains the context. So that posuk also talks about that. And in fact, the posuk says of Eis Hetzaloi, at a time when he was having trouble, when various other kingdoms are attacking him, he continued to rebel against Hashem, which means he remained the same Rasha and kept on adding more and more Averis to the ones he had already done. Similarly, the same thing by Hu Dosen and Aviram, it means they're the same Dosen and Aviram throughout that remained Rishoyim the entire time. So you have four over here. Marsha mentions the Medrash, also mentions another one. You have also by Nimrod, Hu Hoya Gibber Tzayid, also means that he was a Rasha from beginning to end. On the other hand, in tzaddikim, you have the opposite when it comes to tzaddikim, where you have the word hu, and it means that they're the same tzaddik from beginning to end. Avram, hu Avraham, pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, means hu b'tzidkosim et chilos v'ad sofi. He was the same tzaddik from beginning to end, because we know he discovered Hashem when he was 3 years old, and he remained a tzaddik throughout the rest of his life. There is actually a medrash, by the way, where Avraham is concerned. In the first 3 years, I didn't know Hashem yet. In fact, the Rambam brings in Hilchos Avodah Zarah that he was worshiping Avodah Zarah together with everybody else around them because he didn't know any better. So he's concerned that, you know, I started out no good. And the Eibishter tells him, don't worry, l'chot tal yal dusecha, based on a pasuk in Tehillim, it's considered from your youth, from when you were born, as if you're clean, fresh dew, that none of your Averis are counted, none of that that you were worshiping Avodah Zarah is counted against you. It's all part of your tzidkus. He needed to play with that in order to, So that's Avram, who Avraham represents that point. Similarly, you have the expression of Hu Moshe Va'aron, also Hein B'Tzidkosim, the Tchilos and Rad Sofon, from beginning to end of their lives, they were tzaddikim. As Marsha points out, we find the only thing they ever did wrong was by Mei Meriva over there with hitting the rock, and therefore, so what we see that other than that, we see that they were perfect tzaddikim. Similarly, when it says David Hu Hakpatan, also means Hu B'Tzidkosim, but Katnusay Mitchilos and Rad Sofon means David was the same tzaddik and the same cotton, the same small one and the humble one, Mitchilosev ad Sofer, from the beginning, back when he was grazing his father's sheep, all the way to the end when he's the Melech Yisrael. The point of it being, in other words, Marsha says, it can't mean literally that he was a cotton. The context of that pasuk, David who a cotton, is when he comes to the army camp and finds out what's going on with Goliath and offers to go fight against him. He wasn't a cotton then. He was already in his 20s. If you're going to say it means cotton, that he's the youngest of his brothers, then it should have said who a cotton Brahem or something like that, Marsha says. Besides which, actually, you have a different pasuk that mentions an eighth brother in the family named Elihu, who Bapashtus is younger than David, so he's not actually the youngest anyway, so therefore we understand that David who a cotton means that he was the same humble David from beginning to end. And the same way, the same way as when he was younger, and smaller, when he wasn't the great King David yet, he made himself small and humble and was willing to go learn Torah by anybody who's greater than him in Chachma. He made himself humble relative to that person, B'Chachma, relative to anybody who's greater than him in Chachma, could he learn Menu Torah or Bat Torah in order to learn Torah from him, Chachma Malchusa, even when he was king, Hikdin Asatzma Eitzel Mishu Godin Menu B'Chachma, could he learn Menu Torah. So he did also, when he was king, he didn't stand on ceremony, I'm the king and they have to show Derech Eretz to me, rather he showed Derech Eretz for the Talmud Chachamim and wanted to go learn from them. Marsha points out, you have that the Gemara mentions in Brachas that David's Rebbe was Mephibosheth, the son or grandson of David HaMelech, of Shaul HaMelech, and he didn't lord it over him. On the contrary, he accepted when Mephibosheth tells him you're wrong, then he accepted that. Later on, David goes and learns from Achitofel. So whenever there's somebody who David knows more than him in Torah, then he's ready to learn from him. So that's the David who HaKatan. Marsha brings that the Medrash that mentions these who's also mentions a couple of others. It says a pasuk about Chizkiyahu, Behu Yechizkiyahu, same thing, it means it's the same tzaddik from beginning to end, and also by Ezra, who Ezra, Olam Yibavel, also representing the same thing, and then the Medrash says on top of all of those, you have the best who of all, Hu Hashem Elokeinu, B'chol Haaretz Mishpatav, the Eibishter there is B'tzidko Mitzkolos Avad Zofei. The Rif, by the way, mentions over here, so it comes out, then you have five people or groups that are described as who as Rishoyim, and corresponding to them five that are described with who as Tzaddikim, and they parallel one another. Nimrod, who tried to get the whole world to worship Avodah Zarah, is paralleled by Avraham Avinu, who started breaking that up. Moshe and Aaron against Dasan and Avira. Chizkiyahu against Ochaz. Ochaz closed the Batei Medrash. Chizkiyahu opened them and demanded that everybody learn Torah. David against Esav, because we know David, both of them are described as Admoni, red, whether it means red skinned or red haired or whatever. And there's actually a medrash that says that when Shmuel comes to anoint one of Yishai's sons as king, and he sees David and he sees his Admoni Mifena, he's worried. He's just like Esav. How is he possibly the one to be the next king? And the Eved tells him, don't worry, he's im yifei einayim. He will only use his Admoni nature only under the guidance of the Einayim of the Sanhedrin, the Einei Ha'eda, to know when he should fight and who he should kill and when not. So he's the polar opposite of Esav, who's Admoni in the negative sense. So he counteracts Esav, and then corresponding to Achashverosh, who we said was Mevatel Binyan Beis Hamikdash, corresponding to him, you have Ezra, who helped build the Beis Hamikdash. So the five of them parallel the five. Next, the Pasuk says Hamoylech, by Achashverosh it says Hamoylech. Now, if it just meant, and Maharsha points out, if it just meant that to say that he ruled over from Hodu to Kush, then it should have said Hu Achashverosh Asher Molach or something like that, especially since by Yehibi Me Achashverosh, it's in past tense. Hamoylech all of a sudden is in present tense. So why? It should say Hu Achashverosh Me Achashverosh Asher Molach Me Hodu Van Kush. So Hamoylech Omer Rova or Rab Shemolach Me Atzmei means he became king on his own. So he wasn't from the royal family. Now, what does that mean? Amulo l'shvach, amulo l'gnai. Some say that's a praise of him. Others say that's meant as a derogatory thing. L'shvach means d'loy have inish l'choshev l'malka kabasei. Evidently, at that time, there was nobody else who was as suitable to be king as he was. So, in other words, he was elected king on his merits, and that's a very big thing. L'gnai, on the other hand, you could say it's l'gnai, d'loy have a chosel l'malchusa, he wasn't really suitable to be king, v'yohav mamoni yaseira, but he paid the nobles a lot of money to come, and therefore he became king on the strength of that, on the strength of giving out lots of bribes. There is, in fact, the Targum Sheni of two Targum on Gilas Esther. One of them mentions that there was a tremendous fortune that Nebuchadnezzar had hid away, which had buried underground in different places, where Achashverosh found one part of it and became extremely wealthy, and therefore he was able to buy his way into the kingship. So that's the Hamoylech. Next, the Pasuk says that he ruled Mehodu van Kush. So Rabu Shmuel, Chad Omer Hodu B'Tchila Sa'olam B'Kush B'Sefer Olam. One says that Hodu and Kush are at opposite ends of the world, of the known world. So therefore, he ruled over those countries and all the countries in between. The other one says, no, Hodu and Kush were one right next to the other. There is, in fact, Hodu is usually translated as India. There is, in fact, a mountain range right near India, nowadays in Afghanistan, called the Hindu Kush. So that might be the Kush of the Pasuk over here. So what does it mean in that case? What's the great thing that he ruled over two neighboring countries? Kishem shemolach al hodu v'kush. Just as easily as he ruled over hodu and kush, kach molach b'chol olam kulei. That's how easily and strongly he ruled over the entire known world. And Maharsha points out the reason why the Gemara, according to this Manda Omer, doesn't want to say that it means that they're at opposite ends, because then why does it have to say Sheva Metzu Meir Medina? If you know where Hodu is and you know where Kush is, you know how many countries there are between them, and you know they had a big empire. So like this, if you say Hodu and Kush are one next to the other, then that's the Chiddush that he ruled over well over 100 countries with the same power. The Maharal says, by the way, it's not necessarily arguing. The world is a globe. So if you have a Hodu and Kush are one right next to the other, if you go the short way, then you go from one directly to the other. If you go the long way around, then you're going from they cover the whole world. Kayotze b'davar ataymer. You have a similar kind of drasha by Pasuk by Shloima Amala. The Pasuk says, ki hu roide b'chol eivar ha'nohar. Shloima was ruling and dominating over the whole eivar ha'nohar, the whole opposite side of the river, meaning besides Eretz Yisrael, mitifsach v'ad Aza. So again, you have the same machlokes. Rabu Shmuel, chadam tifsach b'sefer olam, v'aza b'sefer olam. One says that tifsach and Aza are at opposite ends in the known world, and it means that Shloima ruled over all those areas between them. And the other one says Tifsach and Aza are one right next to the other, and the same thing. As easily as he could rule over two neighboring provinces like that is how easily he ruled over and had control over the entire world. There's a sicha in Chelik Tezayin where the Rebbe talks about the point that we find a lot of times in Machlokas Rav and Shmuel that Rav tends to look at the surface meaning of the words, and Shmuel tends to look more at the context to see whether it fits the context. He mentions it in connection with Vayakam Melech Chodesh HaMitzrayim as one example, and here's another example where the actual meanings of Hodu and Kush on the face of it are two countries that are very far apart, and the same thing Tifsach and Aza. On the other hand, again, like Marshall is saying, that it doesn't really fit the context of the posse, because why does it have to say Sheva Vesru Me Medina, which is why Shmuel prefers to understand that it means two countries right next to the other. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. Hey, other Aleph. You know the famous story in Brachos that on the day Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah became Nasi, they fired the guard over there, and all the Talmidim could come in. And because Rabbi Amir used to say that any Talmud who was not Teuchet Kavare shouldn't come into the Beis Medrash. And that day they added, as the Gemara says, there were two different versions, 400 or 700 new benches in the Beis Medrash. So the point is, what was Rabbi Gamliel thinking? His Seder Hanhaga, that Abba explains, was a Me'ein of La'osid Lavai. La'osid Lavai, Yasid Ruach HaTorma Avim and Aretz. So at that point, we can truly say that into the Beis Medrash, there will not come any Talmud that ain't Teuchet Kavare, because in Mashiach's time, there won't be somebody who is not Teuchet Kavare. Because from the point of view of the Kedusha of La'osid Lavai, it's impossible to have any other way. This is similar to the Hanhaga of Shammai, Meloshen HaShomer Choysev, that a person carefully considers and evaluates his ways to see what's right and then and what's not. And that's the kind of Hanhaga that's more appropriate to La'osid Lavai. What? How do you know? So maybe, so I think I actually once saw a vote, something along the lines of that, if they see there's a Shomer HaPesach over there and he's not going to allow them in, and they're going to say, okay, well, then forget about it. Then in that case, that itself shows Ein Teuchet Kavare. If they're pushing their way in, that itself shows it. Okay. Other than that, I guess I'm sure the Shomer HaPesach was not Stam a bouncer. He was Stam a person who had, the ability to ask them questions and then figure out where they're holding. Okay. Continuing on halachas of food on Shabbos and halachas of it. So we know there's a malacha of borer. So if you have food mixed in with psoilus, you're allowed to pick out the food from the psoilus, but not the other way around. Even the food, you can't use a keli for it. You have to use your hand, and only what you're going to be eating right away. Not that you're going to pick it out earlier in the day and save it for later in the day. So all of that, whatever you want, and even if you have two things that are both edible, but you want to eat one and not the other, then one you want to eat is the oichel, and the other one is considered the psoilus. The Alter Rebbe, though, adds actually that if it is all one min and you're picking out one from the other, then fine, then you would be able to pick out even whichever one you want, because they are both edible and they are both the same min.